So, hello everyone. Welcome to this talk. If you're about as old as me, we have grown up with games from the early, like mid 2000s, and this is exactly the time frame that we are going to hear something about the gaming technology, building games with 20-year-old tech. Please welcome Bastian Eicher, who will tell us what it's like to work with the same technology today. Thank you.
Hey everyone. So thanks for the intro. I'm going to talk about building games with 20-year-old tech. And during my day job, I have absolutely nothing to do with that. So I'm a software engineer doing your typical cloud adjacent stuff. And I've been like dabbling in game dev as a hobby, but I never actually released anything. And at the end of this talk, you'll probably also figure out why. But before we jump in, I just would like to see a quick raise of hands. Who of you has already been playing games 20 years ago? Okay, we'll say maybe like 50%. For the rest of you, don't worry, you'll grow old one day too. So a quick overview of the topics I wanted to touch upon today. First off, obviously, how were games built in the 2000s? What kind of tech was used back then? More specifically, a quick look at what the fixed function pipeline is and how that differs from shaders, which you've probably all heard of in the context of modern games. And for those of you who did raise your hands, maybe a little bit of nostalgia, at least hearing some names that you're familiar with. And then I'm going to show you a few small live demos where I built stuff today using ancient 3D graphics APIs, ancient in computer terms, of course. Quick disclaimer, I'm only talking about PC gaming, and since it's the early 2000s, that means Windows gaming, so trigger warning there. So just to make sure that we all have the same vocabulary, I want to give you a very short primer on the kind of steps that are involved in 3D rendering, so we can refer to those as we look at how things changed over the years. So your basic input data is always going to be vertexes, so points in 3D space describing an object, and the first thing you need to do with those is transform them. This transformation generally consists of three parts: placing your object somewhere in the world, accounting for the view that you have, for example, the game in-game camera viewing the object, and then projecting it onto a flat surface. And for those of you that love math, that's just a multiplication with a 4x4 matrix. At least for me, initially, it was kind of mind-bending to think that those operations can just be condensed down into single multiplication. The next step is called culling, which basically just means throwing away any vertex data that's outside of the visible space, so a simple performance optimization. You don't need to render what's not on your screen. Then you rasterize the whole thing, so turn it into pixels, and apply the textures. So for each pixel, perform a lookup in your texture to figure out what color it should have. Now you do your lighting, so for each visible pixel, calculate for the vertex that it came from, where the light source is relative to it, how bright should it be, etc. You do a depth test, which amounts to figuring out if the object you're currently rendering is covered by something else, and finally do some blending. That might be things like alpha transparency. Now, obviously, games are going to use some kind of graphics API. Nowadays, you may have things like Vulkan or Metal if you're in the Apple ecosystem. But in the 2000s, the two predominant APIs were still only OpenGL and DirectX. So that's your API that your game is talking to, which under the hoods is implemented by your graphic card driver, which then actually talks to the bare metal. Now, I'll only be talking about DirectX just to save some time, but the concepts are pretty transferable. And of course, you're going to be using the OG logo because that one looks much fancier than this boring new one. So I'm going to start even a little bit earlier than the early 2000s, so around 1999, when DirectX 7 was all the rage, and you had games like Counter-Strike or the original Deus Ex. And this was the time when we used the fixed function pipeline. So roughly simplified, you could say those inputs that we talked about, your vertex data, this matrix that describes your transform, the positions, the brightnesses of the lights, and so on, that's just all input you stick into your graphics API, and magically out comes the image. Everything else is a black box. So under the hoods, your graphics card in hardware, in a fixed pipeline, is doing those steps. Except not exactly. Lighting actually used to happen before the rasterization step. So that means the brightness of each individual point in your 3D mesh is calculated, and between it, you just interpolate linearly. In the live demo, I'll show you in a second what that actually looks like and why that's not so great. If we move forward around 2 years, we've got DirectX 8, and this is when things started getting a bit more interesting. You've got games of the era like Halo, which ran on the Xbox originally, but technology-wise, actually, it's kind of a derivative of Windows and DirectX and the original Splinter Cell, and this is when you got shaders. So shaders are a way to replace a part of the pipeline in a very limited fashion. So the transform and lighting steps, you could write a little program that run on your graphics card in a language called HLSL in the case of DirectX. So it's a C-like language that some people hate it, but it's kind of elegant in the sense that it abstracts away a bunch of the details. The shaders back then, they couldn't even do branching. So if you wanted to write something like if-else, you could, but the compiler under the hood would actually execute both branches and just throw away one of the results. This allowed early effects like skeletal animations, deformations, you know, like a water surface with a wobbly wave. And on the pixel side, you could now program the texture lookup. This could allow simple effects like bump mapping or detailed texturing, where when you get closer to an object, you'll see a different texture. I'll also show you a live demo of that in a minute. If we move further along the timeline, 2002, 2004, we've got DirectX 9, so this is sort of like where my heart lives. And now you get seminal games like Half-Life 2, Far Cry. And the big difference here is that shader instructions could get a lot longer. So the piece of code that you can run instead of the fixed function pipeline is like 5 times longer. This allows a lot more complex effects. And crucially, it finally allows you to do the lighting calculation for each individual pixel. Simply because the pixel shaders, the piece of code that runs after the rasterization, now is long enough so you can do some meaningful math there. And it also allows post-screen effects. So keep in mind, this was not always a thing. You could not always have like bloom, like a light source that seems to bleed over edges, because what you need to do there is render the whole scene, take the result, stick it into a texture, and render that again with another pixel shader that then, for example, blooms the bright parts. And now we basically reach the end of history, because everything after this I'm not interested in anymore. DirectX 9 OC, the last version of, let's say, the classic way of rendering things. Now you've got games like Fear or The Elder Scrolls Oblivion. And what was added here was even higher instruction limits, so your shaders could get even longer, and crucially, they could be using dynamic branching, so actual programs, not just a series of linear instructions. And now you get more complex effects like depth of field, motion blur, or HDR tone mapping, which is not the HDR you're thinking of on your modern screens. This is just faking it. And once you move beyond that into the era of DirectX 10, in the 2006 and later, and you get games like Crysis, which obviously still no computer on this planet can actually run, shaders are now the only way to do stuff. There is no more fixed function pipeline. You have to write your own code, even for basic stuff like transforming your vertexes. And that does make sense, because no serious game was still using the fixed function pipeline. But if you're like an indie dev and want to start from zero, it kind of sucks, because you have to build everything from scratch. So this is like the end of the fixed function pipeline after, like, say, a 20-year tenure. And now it becomes more and more, well, necessary to use an off-the-shelf engine. You're going to use your Unities, your Unreals, your Godots, which take care of the basic bookkeeping so you can build your game. But that's no fun, right? Like, you shouldn't build your own graphics engine. So obviously, I built my own graphics engine. Now, I started with this thing in 2004 when DirectX 9 OC was still all the rage. And this thing mixes shaders and fixed function pipelines, so it uses the built-in functionality where it didn't need anything custom, uses some shaders where it does, and I just never stopped working on it. I mean, that thing vanished in some cupboard for a while, but eventually I took it back out and kept working on it a little bit, and I just wanted to show you what that actually looks like today, so what kind of effects you can make. May the demo gods be with me, because showing things live tend to break. Okay, so we've got a super simple 3D scene here with a single point light source and a single 3D mesh. This is rendering using the fixed function pipeline. So this is the kind of stuff that you, in principle, could have done before 2000 on a DirectX 7 graphics card. We've got a standard 3D model here that's part of the DirectX sample set. And you maybe can see there's a slight glint here on the shoulders, specular highlights, that sort of stuff. If you turn on per pixel lighting, I'm going to toggle between the two so maybe you can spot the differences. We get a much harder line here between light and not light, because now each individual pixel figures out if it's in the light. And those specular highlights also get a lot sharper. And by using per pixel lighting with a shader, you also can add more advanced effects like normal mapping, you know, where every single pixel now has its normal vector defined by an extra texture, so you can simulate a little bit more detail than it's actually there. So let's dial it up to 11 and see how much we can squeeze out of this old rendering stuff. Please don't crash. So, same engine, a few more effects squeezed in. I mentioned the detail texturing earlier, for example. So if you pay close attention to the texture of the grass here, as we get closer, we get a more detailed texture here, a blurrier out in the distance. We also have some real-time reflections. The way those are done is basically we need to render the entire scene multiple times. Once regularly, once from the perspective of the water surface but flipped, and once with a regular perspective and everything clipped that's below the water, above the water surface, and then have a shader composite that all back together. The other effect that I mentioned earlier was this bloom effect. So if you look here, we've got like light that seems to bleed out over its source. That's a typical post-screen effect where, for example, you will render the parts of the scene that should be bloomed, blur it, and overlay it. So without this post-screen shader, that's what you get. So there is a tiny game that I never released, and at the end of this talk I'll show you a QR code so you can try it out. So technically I'm releasing it today, which uses basically this... So it's basically using this rendering framework, not this exact map. You can see it if you try it out. And the rough gameplay idea is that you have your single character that you can control, and you have some destination that you're being sent off to while you see some other NPCs walking around. Notice no skeletal animations. I never got around to implementing that. That's why I've got characters in their boring T poses. And once you've reached a point, time will rewind, and you get to play as a different character, and the actions that you performed as your previous character got recorded and are basically just replayed as an NPC. So I'm going to leave it there, just so we don't go over time, and show you that slide with the QR code. So, and I'm actually finished with my talking points here, so thanks for your attention. And if we have some time, maybe a question or two, I'm not sure if there's any time left.
Yes, we do still have time left. Perfect. So just a quick round of applause for Bastian Eicher. And if you have any questions, please raise your hand so we can see them. I'll start. To warm you up, why would you do something like that, build a engine with 20-year-old tech in the year 2026?
So when I first started tinkering with this, it was still state-of-the-art. At that time, there were already off-the-shelf graphics engines, but it was more like, oh, I want to learn something. Years later, when, for example, at university, I had some tasks that had to do with 3D graphics, I was kind of at a fork, do I do this a reasonable way, or do I dig out my old code? And it was a combination of, I already know my own code, I'm familiar with this, so laziness, and then also sort of a little bit of ego, like, hey, this is my own, I built it from scratch. So to be clear, I wouldn't recommend doing that. If you actually want to succeed at building a game, don't waste your time on the low-level stuff. But if you want to learn things, it's a great experience.
Any questions from the audience?
So during the time where we had this move of the pixel shader to the later stages of rendering, is that the reason why we had like this era of games where we had this really pronounced specular highlights, like where almost everything looked like highly plastic models?
So I'm guessing, I think it's probably a combination of finally you could do specular highlights that have like a little bit of a sharper outline instead of per vertex, and then maybe also a little bit of like an artistic decision or people going overboard. Yes, we can do it. Now we're going to dial it up to 11. So I think that's a reasonable guess. That might be part of the reason. I mean, nowadays, 3D rendering usually uses something called PBR, so physically based rendering, where they try to take into consideration the real structure of materials, how smooth they are, and like conservation of energy and all that. And in the DirectX 9 era, it's like this, the math is all just faking it. And so, yeah, then you get this over-the-top glossiness very easily if you don't tweak your parameters just right. I also dialed up the glossiness here a little bit just so you can see it. So, yeah.
Would your game run on the old hardware from back in the 2000s, or do you need modern PCs for that?
So it has a bunch of fallbacks. It can run entirely without shaders. So if you go through the settings, you can turn off water reflections, you can turn off detail mapping. So yes, it would run on something from the 2000s, but not look quite as nice. Specifically, the water reflections are a kind of insane thing to do, because rendering the whole scene three times, no. Which is actually another nice benefit of using ancient tech. I've got a huge amount of headroom. This is internal integrated graphics from 10 years ago. This laptop sucks, and it handles this just fine. If you run this on a modern gaming PC, you get hundreds of frames per second, so you don't have to worry as much about optimization. Maybe one small thing to add there, like this was also common in the era. If you open a game like Half-Life 2, that thing can also run on DirectX 8 hardware. So DirectX 10 is sort of like a hard cut, new kind of hardware. Previously, games actually had this fallback where they would say, I'm going to use shaders if I can, and if I can't, I'm going to use the fixed function pipeline.
So you mentioned that the fixed graphics function pipeline died almost 15 years ago. So I guess, does your hardware still have these circuits, or is the driver just faking it?
The driver is faking it. So there's different ways how manufacturers can implement it. Microsoft, for example, just provides a translation layer where if your graphics card driver implements DirectX 12, it just transparently translates 9 to 12. Basically, they have their own handcrafted shaders that recreate what the fixed function pipeline did. So no modern hardware really has like the silicon for that anymore. But thanks to backwards compatibility, I don't really have to care, and it just keeps working, which is kind of beautiful.
It keeps working until it doesn't.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, at first try, I didn't get this thing to run on Proton, but if any of you manages to run this on Linux, please let me know, because I would like to see it run there, and just rewriting it and porting it to OpenGL, I don't have the spare time for that, unfortunately.
Which is a thing that games also did in the 2000s. Like the Unreal Engine did run on Linux, and they had an OpenGL and DirectX backend.
Oh, another similar trivia. In the case of Half-Life 2, the Linux version, they actually had a translation layer baked into the binary. So it uses DirectX 9, but they basically have a compiled-in library that then transparently translates it to OpenGL. So these things are doable, but again, probably not for me in my spare time.
Okay, I think that wraps things up. Thank you very much again, Bastian. Please give another round of applause.